Gene, we have you for 3 segments.
Yes, look at me like a snowplow. We're just going to plow
right
through it. But it's going to take a while because there's some drifts in here, as you can see. You know, okay. And hopefully I won't forget some of the details I meant to call this information. But we'll start off with the first item, which is an enforcement order. This actually, FYI, as you can see from the time frame, it actually goes back to last summer, is one that I had initiated with a series of others that y'all have already handled and resolved. It involves trichomonosis permits. Literally, this was someone kept buying bulls. And our inspector was very diligent about trying to ensure that he maintained them correctly, but he would take them and resell them. And it was a significant enough problem that we took this enforcement action. That said, in dealing with him, and I personally dealt with him, there was health issues in his family, so I would allow it to frankly sit for a period of time until we got to a point where we could deal with it. And at that point, he was not ready to resolve. He was not ready to accept the terms, and so I set it for a hearing and explained to him. It went to hearing. He didn't show. It's what they call a default. He did not show, and I will say this is right before the last commission meeting, so they gave it back to me to go deal with it, but they changed their process since I dealt with them at that time. So with that, we bring it back to you now. It's what they call a default order. Upon approval, I will then send it back to him to note the fact that it is highly approved, and we'll seek him to take care of the obligations associated with that order.
Okay. Yes,
Dean. I just point out here, you know, this is an example of why, you know, there was just a request for industry to help support us with an enhanced Class C misdemeanor authority for some of our enforcement actions. We basically got a guy here. He hadn't paid us. I'm not sure we'll ever get any money. We had to go to numerous legal hearings. We didn't have the opportunity to go to JP court on this because it's one of the diseases. And I would just respectfully request that before we go to the next session, maybe we can sit down again with our industry partners and see if we can refine the language that was not ultimately passed to help our agency more efficiently deal with problems like this. Because we could have dealt with this in one day. And the JP court would have been dealing with collections rather than Gene and Mary in loss, you know, legal hearings and defaults and delays. It's just real inefficient. And it forces us to take one of these on when there were maybe 10 of them that could have spent their time on other things. So I just throw that out for y'all's awareness. Next year, when we start to think about possible dialogue on potential needs of legislation, we still really need to come back and hopefully talk about enhancing our authority so Gene and Mary don't spend literally months, weeks on one guy that hasn't paid us. And so that's all I want to say.
Now, well said, and it's something we need to work towards. Yes?
Gene, say we got an order against this guy. I mean, what do you got to do? We got to run him down and try to find him? I mean, what can you do?
Oh, you know what?
Put a lien against his property? Or?
No, I will take it and go to it. I mean, if I don't get it resolved, and I will say I've had some dealings with him, give credit is what I consider a gentleman. He really did, I will say, operate in a way that made it difficult to do our job, and that's the point I made is, look, we're here to do a purpose. And as you'll see from the change of the rules, there's a process, but you got to play by the process. And that's really what this is for. If not, it'll go to the attorney generals for collection. Though I will say we don't have many. Stockdale's, most of ours through JP, which it's up to the county, they get the fines, but it really does help at a local level to be efficient. That said, in the past, when I've had these and gone to the AG, they've been very helpful, and they've actually chased down 2 of them and made them pay.
He didn't show up for the hearing. I mean, the guy's defiant. He's not going to.
Yeah.
You know.
He told me he wasn't going to show. I mean, he was upfront about that fact. So, you know, I gave him credit. There was a health issue that I tried to allow him some latitude.
Is there a time of this $3,000?
No, I mean, I'll send him a letter. I'll send him 2 upon the second one, then I'll go to the AGs. And so we'll see. I don't know to some degree he won't just, because typically to some degree they don't want it hanging over their heads. I mean, it's a practical matter. Most businessmen recognize they want to resolve it and get it behind them because they don't want to look over their shoulder every time. That's my hope. If not, ultimately, I do think we'll achieve our goal. He'll remember us. I don't think we'll have another problem with him again. I don't think he'll ever see his name again. So,
and you ready?
I think that's probably really what we're after, is trying to adjust some attitudes and ensure compliance. And I think we've got it here. Plus, it frankly serves as a deterrent for others out there to recognize they don't want to be in that situation. So permit your animals in accordance with the requirements, and it won't be an issue.
You ready for a motion?
I'm ready for a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the final order against Bob Cody for violations of Animal Health Commission rules.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the final order against Bob Cody for violations of commission rules. Is there any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, Commissioners, I now bring to you the first of our rule proposals. This is involving trichomoniasis. Just going back to last commission meeting, we had a work session led by Commissioner Locke involving what they annually do in terms of looking at this. This is an area, and get back to the Bob Cody thing, looking to try to allow a little more latitude in terms of people buying an animal and then turn around and resell them without necessarily testing it. And so this creates an avenue and opportunity in the process where, you know, you can do it, but we want to make sure they maintain the control on it. That's what the control program is, to ensure quality control that these animals are either being maintained in channels ended up in slaughter or they get retested when they're and so. And this just allows for that, allows them to go home under a permit and then return if they want to sell it, if they believe that there's a value in it. And there were some that were doing it for that reason. So these are recommendations that came out of the actual work group. At the time, it was too close to the commission meeting, the last one to actually bring them to you, but I bring them to you now. And then some cleanups in response to some of the recommendations that have been made by the group.
Mr. Chairman, I move the proposed amendments to Chapter 38, Trichomonas, located in Title 4 of the Texas Administrative Code, as discussed today. I further move that notice of this proposed amendments be published in the Texas Register with a 30-day comment period.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that we approve Item 13A, Chapter 38, Trichomoniasis. Is there any further discussion?
Just one comment. I've been dealing a lot with that, and it's really a good program. I mean, seems like every week I get a couple of them. So it's a thumbs up in my, from my perspective.
And Commissioner Locke has done a lot of work on this, and we appreciate that. Any further discussion? None, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
The next one I bring to you is for Chapter 41. This is the fever tick one. This is a response to the legislation that had been introduced, House Bill 1807, and passed. That will basically broaden the authority for this program. It's been focused initially on livestock and on dipping being the primary treatment form. Of course, with all the changes and stuff that one has in the in the treatment options out there, as you can see, the authority allowed us to broaden the rules. What I bring back to you is this, recognizing and bringing into the process for different type forms of treatment, including doramectin, which is one of the forms of treatment that they've been using, as well as with ivermectin on the medicated form that's used with, feeder deer and stuff too, to try to address those. So that's what I bring back to you today. For your consideration, if you have any questions.
No questions. Could I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we propose the amendments to Chapter 41, Fever Ticks, located in Title 4 of the Texas Administrative Code, as discussed today. I further move that notice of the proposed amendments be published in the Texas Register with a 30-day comment period.
Okay. We have a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve Item 13B, Chapter 41, Fever Ticks. Is there any further discussion? None, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
This next rule proposal I bring is a very significant kind of rewrite and refocus. This is Dr. Ellison alluded to. It was from House Bill 3569. It literally was allowing the agency to create a regulatory administrative, an authorized program for certain types of activities to ensure quality control and ensure that people perform certain things. You know, to this one, I got to give a lot of credit to both Mary Ludeker, who really did write and came up and worked on this very hard and coordinated a lot. TVMA, whose association was very active in providing us not only input, but their committee input involving this to ensure that we were doing something that meant not only the veterinary standards, but also to ensure the quality control. I know Dr. Vickers was very active in this too, as well as Dr. Evanston and stuff. So you know, with it, as you can see, she's written a very significant body to try to help address that. It's been broken into two sections, one on kind of the primary regulatory to get the various things, and then the other is the old authorized personnel program that follows our brucellosis program. We've always historically had an authorization process for brucellosis in the markets and stuff, and so it's contained in that. I open it for any questions, but I may have to ask Mary to come up here.
Yeah, I just wanted to second what Gene said. Mary did a great job in crafting from scratch a new rule that, truthfully, many other states, I've got 10 to 15 state vets are going to, they want this when we're finished, and they're going to go back to their legislators and attempt to do the same thing. So I want to give Mary credit, but I also would just suggest that y'all's call, but you may want to consider a longer comment period, maybe 60 days instead of 30. This is a substantive rule that affects veterinarians in the state of Texas. Y'all aren't going to meet again the next 60 days anyway, and you
okay.
might want to give a little more time. That's my recommendation. And that's just an oversight. We intended to have that longer to start with, so it's up to you guys. But
okay.
I'd like to say one thing about Mary. She's really got some talent. She can talk like a vet and act like a lawyer.
Yeah.
And she can talk like a lawyer and act like a vet. So,
you know. Maybe she's a chameleon, I would agree. Yeah, she truly is.
What a combination.
Yeah.
Dangerous.
They call that conflicted in some ways, coming to terms with those two sides.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we propose the amendment to Chapter 47, approved personnel located in Title 4 of the Texas Administrative Code, and as discussed today. I further move that notice of the proposed amendments be published in the Texas Register with a 30-day comment period.
Let's make
Would you like to amend that to 60? 60. 60. Okay, do I have a second on the 60-day?
I second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Item 13C, motion Chapter 47, approved personnel. Is there any further discussion? If none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, Commissioners, the next rule I bring to you also comes out of legislation and was passed during the session. This was House Bill 1521. And one of the things it did was, one of the issues that our statutes always had is when it came to being able to require disposal of a sick animal or animal that was sick under one of our regulatory programs, or to pay indemnity, was to have the necessary authorization. And it had always been defined as livestock over the years. However, in order to ensure that should we have a critical poultry issue or domestic fowl issue that needed to require to pay indemnity, they gave us the authority. They amended the chapter to add them both to it.
I think you missed one.
Gene, you're out of order.
Yeah.
I
don't mean that legally out of order, just out of order in how they are
in the book.
Disease traceability.
You were absent.
ADT's next.
Oh, man, I did jump way up. Sorry.
If you want to finish that, we'll move.
I apologize. You're right. I did jump up there. I was writing down something. Yeah, this was Chapter 57 to go back. It would have been the last proposal. And literally what it was we were creating a new indemnification section to try to ensure that we had the necessary ability to buy birds. This comes up typically with not having the authority with backyard slots where they may not be. The industries tend to try to take care of and ensure that. You know, I would like to thank James Grimm. He gave us a good insight and input in ensuring that we came up with something that would allow us to ensure quality control and address the issue.
So we're on 13F?
Yes.
Commissioners? So is there any discussion on 13F?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we propose the new section in Chapter 57, poultry, located in Title 4 of the Texas Administrative Code, as discussed today. I further move that notice of the proposed new chapter be published in the Texas Register with a 30-day comment period.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve Item 13F, Chapter 57, poultry. Any further discussion? None. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, thank you. I apologize. I'm going to go back to 13D. This is the new chapter of the Animal Disease Traceability chapter we've created in response to trying to consolidate issues related to disease traceability and for the various disease programs. With this one, what we did is you'll see in the adoption, we were removing a change of ownership requirement that we had for identification and moved it to this chapter. The purpose of this chapter, too, is to ensure with the demise of brucellosis and stuff, that for these disease programs, there still is an ability through that to have traceability through identification. It follows some with the previous one, which is based on change of ownership. It also follows some with the federal model, too, that you can't go to slaughter and stuff. If you take them to slaughter, you're not required to ID. Ours is a little more lenient than the federal standard, which is a 3-day turnaround to go to slaughter. Ours is 7-day. It does is he notifies the onus on the buyer. They make that decision on, you know, if they're going to slaughter within those time frames, they don't have to ID it. If they do, then they would turn around and be responsible for IDing it. And I think we'll do that and make it follow the federal, but more leniently in those regards to slaughter.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that we propose the amendments to Chapter 50, Animal Disease Traceability, located in Title 4 of the Texas Administrative Code, as discussed today. Further move that notice of the proposed new chapter be published in the Texas Register with a 30-day comment period.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve item 13D, Chapter 50, Animal Disease Traceability. Is there any further discussion? None, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Okay, Commissioners, the last proposal I bring you now is Chapter 51. These are entry requirements, is 13. And basically what, in this case, is Dr. Ellis had alluded to in his report, was providing for an exception to the trichinosis requirements for Texas bulls that go out of state to a bull station trials so they can return without a test, provided that they've been maintained in a controlled environment without any contact with female cattle. This follows, once again, the recommendations made of the trichinosis group, and just following up to propose that for entry requirements.
This could be also for bulls that are out of state in a semen collection center. Right.
Well, now you talk about the that's above. That was already did the CSS certified artificial insemination facility.
Yeah,
that's a little above. If you look.
Oh, okay.
In this that was actually
that was
a previous recommendation.
Yeah, we
that was in the room. That was already there.
This came out.
We've done that. That's right. That's right.
This is bull test station. Right.
Coming
that's,
back
that's
in.
Guys, bulls go to
yes,
another state.
We're adding it because I think
now they're coming back.
Identified as, wait a second, right. We're not this, but yeah. We have the same quality controls.
Right.
Keep refining it to make it work better.
Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we propose the amendments to Chapter 51, entry requirements located in Title 4 of the Texas Administrative Code is discussed today. Further move that the notice the proposed amendments be published in the Texas Register with a 30-day comment period.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve item 13E, Chapter 51, entry requirements. Is there any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Gene, before you get to item 14, we have five items up for adoption. I know we have some guests here from Montana. Welcome. The way we do this on these particular items, I know we have two requests for public comments. What we'll do is we'll have Mr. Snelson give a background information on it, and when we're on that particular subject, I'll ask you to come up and give your comment. Go ahead.
Well, this is the first subject up, and that is Chapter 35. It does two things. You know, the first was just to acknowledge this was to remove the, this is where our change of ownership identification requirement had been, as we move it to the ADP chapter and stuff, too, out of the brucellosis. So we were removing it. That said, the other issue was about the brucellosis risk and issue out of the greater Yellowstone area of the three states of Montana, Wyoming, and Idaho. And so, as you can see, it was proposed to apply to the whole state. We got quite a few comments. I know Montana, Dr. Zielinski's here to speak to his, and so he had some very extensive comments. He may be a vet, but I think he plays a lawyer on TV.
Okay, and with that, I would welcome Dr. Marty Zielinski. Is that how you pronounce it?
All right.
He is with the State of Montana Department of Livestock. Again, welcome to Texas.
Thanks so much, Commissioner. And I think Dr. Ellis and I got it all worked out. We have three wolves and four brucellosis positive elephant event. We're going to swap them for some feral hogs. And call it even Steven and we're ready to roll. So. You know, having said that, you know, I really appreciate it. It is truly an honor to come up here and visit with you and elaborate a little bit on what our program is so that way you can make the best informed decision. So Dr. Ellis and I have visited on this topic on a number of occasions, and I think we all agree that there is an issue there. There is definitely a risk. I think we definitely disagree on what needs to be done about it to protect the state of Texas. So I really appreciate the ability to visit here. So, and certainly Dr. Ellis's you know, intent is honorable, and it is exactly what I'd be doing in the state of Montana. So I don't in any way want to impinge erode that intent. So Montana takes brucellosis extremely seriously. It's really our number one issue. We don't have a southern border. We don't have feral hogs, unless the trade goes through.
Would you like some?
We don't have pyroplasmosis. Yeah. I mean, really, we're a one-horse town. This brucellosis is really our number one focus, and we're able to focus all the resources on that problem. We've hired key staff. We have a veterinarian that specifically was hired for brucellosis, for the brucellosis program. There's Dr. Eric Liska, who's here with me. We've also hired a compliance specialist who goes through all of the herds, winds up looking at testing histories, find out who's tested, who hasn't in the last 12 months, try to find out, make sure we don't have one of those untested herds. In the last year alone, in the last fiscal year, we have tested 42,000 out of 60,000 animals that are in this surveillance area. So over 60% of the animals that are in our surveillance area have been tested just in a 12-month period alone. When you look at the statistics, when you start crunching the numbers, the likelihood of doing all that testing and not finding the positives is extremely small. So what I wanted to visit today with you about is I wanted to talk just a little bit about what brucellosis and wildlife means to us, kind of talk a little bit about the geography, explain what our regulations are, maybe touch on what it means to Texas from my perspective as far as what the risk of Texas is, what the rules proposes to do, and then I was going to propose some alternatives. So really the DSA in the state of Montana is in southwest Montana, and it is designed to identify the cattle at risk from brucellosis positive elk. So we know that brucellosis positive elk are in southwest Montana. They can potentially expose cattle. And so the key to identifying the cattle at risk is to identify where the brucellosis positive elk are. Right. And in fact, we've done a lot of work. We started with hunter elk surveillance kits, and we've gotten sophisticated enough where we look at the perimeter of our surveillance area, which is about 5% of Montana is all. And it does cover the border of Yellowstone National Park and go outward. We have started with hunter test kits, and at this point we look at the boundary, find out when we don't have tests, and we have a live elk capture study where they net gun elk from a helicopter. They test them for brucellosis, and they put a collar on them so they can track them for the next year. This is a leading study. It's not done anywhere else, and we can not only find whether elk in a particular area have brucellosis, but we also know where they go during the rest of the year. And the beauty of that is that hunter test kits harvest animals in the fall during their summer range, but our study and our tracking gives us information on where the elk are during their risk period, so during the time that they can abort and transmit brucellosis to cattle. So it really is a phenomenal project that we're really proud of, and it's a partnership with our Fish and Game Commission. Our DSA, as I mentioned, has 5%. It's 5% of the state. It has about 192, give or take, ranches that are completely circumscribed or within the DSA, and then it has another 80 that are seasonal. So they'll come in, they'll graze in the summer, and then they'll come out. So about 250 ranches or so. That, as I mentioned, the risk is seasonal. The risk is not in the fall, but it's in the spring. During calving and abortion time. So how do we address this risk? We all know that there's a risk, and so how do we try to get it as minimal as possible for the benefit of our producers and the benefit of your producers? We have pretty rigorous testing requirements and regulations. First of all, we have an ID requirement, so there needs to be a permanent identification on any sexually intact animal leaving our DSA. So if the worst scenario was were to come true and a brucellosis positive animal came out of Montana, out of the DSA, you would know exactly where it is. You would know if it's a local problem or if it's an imported problem. Secondarily, we require testing before movement and before change of ownership, so before sale. So what you're looking at is if you have an animal that leaves the DSA, it needs to be identified as a minimum, regardless of whether it's sold, and then if it's sold, it needs to be, or it needs to leave, it needs to be tested. Now the testing requirements as far as age eligibility, this is important because for cattle that are going on feed or any of these other non-breeding uses, the testing eligibility age is 12 months. So anything over 12 months has to be tested. But for breeding animals, based on the USDA review that was mentioned earlier, we have dropped the age to birth. Basically, if you have a breeding animal, you must test her regardless of age when she leaves the DSA, when she's sold. So that's a very high bar for disease surveillance. Also, we have brand inspections. We have a strong county line brand inspection program. So if you sell or you move animals out of a county, we have 600 brand inspectors that do those inspections. The brand inspection department, the brand enforcement, is housed within the Department of Livestock. So I'm with Animal Health, and brand inspection is the other division. We work